This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Every year at this time, for more than a century, the National Audubon Society has been asking volunteers, just like you and me, to join its Christmas Bird Count. Now, this year's Christmas Bird Count continues through January 5th, and all you have to do is count all the birds you spot in a certain area during a single 24-hour period. Well, we wanted to hear which unusual birds were spotted in our area, here in the New York City area, so we called Audubon's Rare Bird Alert here in New York, and this is what they told us.
Among the Brooklyn counts, 122 species last Saturday were a Eurasian widgeon, redneck grebe, rough-legged hawk, barn owl, pine warbler, and two yellow-breasted chats.
Wow. All that here right in New York City. So if you join the Christmas Bird Count, you could have fun of seeing more birds, you know, all kinds of birds, plus the total number of birds, the number of species you report. And they help the Audubon Society track how birds in North America and parts of Latin America are faring. Last year, a record number of volunteers in the U.S., Canada, and Latin America counted more than 61 million birds. Wow. That sounds like a whole lot of birds, and some species like raptors and doves are doing well in many places. But the fact is, in general, birds are in trouble. The wild weather we've been having here, you know, in the past few years has been very hard on them. Just look at this winter's heavy snow and storms out west in Colorado, places like that. How do the birds survive something like that? Jeff LeBaron is the director of the Christmas Bird Count. He joins us on Science Friday every year to talk about the results of last year's bird count. Plus, he's been on three bird counts in central Massachusetts so far this year alone. And he's going to tell us what he's seen in this surprisingly warm weather. Jeff joins us today by phone from his home in Williamsburg, Massachusetts. Welcome back to Science Friday, Jeff.
Thank you very much, Ira. It's a pleasure to be here again.
Thank you. Last year, the Christmas Bird Count found that the massive hurricanes of 2005 had been tough on the birds, especially in New Orleans and along the Gulf Coast. Dr. Peter Yawkey is a biographer who is associate professor and chair of the geography department at the University of New Orleans. And he has been studying resident birds in New Orleans since 1994. And he has signed up for this Christmas Bird Count, too. And he's been looking at how birds in New Orleans are doing a year after Hurricanes Rita and Katrina. Dr. Yawkey, welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you, Ira. It's great to be with you.
And before we start talking to both of you, I'm going to give our listeners a chance to spot a bird over the radio. You don't have to look at your radio. You can just listen to your radio. We're going to play two bird calls. And you can call us at 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK, and tell us which birds you think they are. Two birds. Here we go. Here's a clue. If you spot this bird on your Christmas bird count, you're going to go down in ornithological history. Wow, that's a tough bird to pick up. Well, let's give you an easy one. Here's a Christmas bird cat this bird is doing very, very well, even in New Orleans. Even I know that one because I've seen them outside now. My bird feeder, and actually they actually take the seeds off the ground, not from the feeder themselves. Give us a call with your guests. Our number is 1-800-989-8255. You don't win anything. That's the bad news. You just get to tell us on the radio what you think that those birds are. And you can also surf over to our website at sciencefriday.com. Let me turn to my guests. Jeff, how can you give us a thumbnail sketch on how the count is going this year?
Well, this year, here in the Northeast anyway, the three, as you mentioned, I've been on three counts so far this year, and I would have to say the weather is what I would call absurdly mild here during the count period. I know that's quite different, as you mentioned, when you get out into the, you know, certainly the Rockies and the West Coast, they're getting hammered with storms and snowstorms and a lot of rain in the south, so it's, you know, sort of hit or miss what the weather's like. But up here in the Northeast, it's been pretty ridiculously mild. I've had flying sulfur butterflies on one of my Christmas counts. I've had a basking painted turtle, singing peepers, and I even had six American woodcocks in display flight last Saturday down in Rhode Island. So it's not your typical kind of brutal, windy Christmas count season that we expect up here. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. Finish, because I was just going to ask, what effect does warm weather have on the normal existence of the birds?
Well, it affects, as much as anything, it sort of affects our ability to detect them. There's a lot of open water, actually an awful lot of fresh water has yet to be frozen, even up into eastern Canada. So many species aren't concentrated into the areas where we usually anticipate finding them on Christmas bird counts. And also they're just out more dispersed, and some species like robins and things like that haven't had to move as far south as usual. We actually did have a pretty strong cold snap earlier in the fall, so some of the lingering species kind of get hastened on their way. And we didn't have anything like the major fall weather events that we had last year that led up to all the bizarre stuff that was left lingering across the continent, really, on Christmas counts then with the sort of hurricane events. So the mild weather can actually be to the benefit of the birds, but sometimes to the detriment of the counters because we just can't find them because they're not as concentrated as they usually are.
This weather is not warm enough to prevent them from migrating, is it?
No. Actually, most birds that are migrating are pretty much programmed to migrate, and it's more sort of keying on day length and the diurnal cycle, and it gets to a certain point in the late summer and fall, and it's time for them to head south. So they don't necessarily key as much on what the temperature is doing. Some of the other species, like robins and things like that, are more sort of keeping an eye to, you know, is how much snow cover there is, you know, is there food available, wild food, are there still worms and bugs out, and stuff like that. So,
yeah, there was a picture in the newspaper on the web today of New York City's most famous raptor, Pale Male.
Oh, yeah.
Helping out an Associated Press photographer actually captured a photo of Pale Male spotting a bald eagle right above it with a fish in its talons. So.
Well,
that's a rare sight in Manhattan.
I would think so, yes. I'm sure Pale Male wasn't particularly interested in the fish and was much more interested in the eagle that was over his territory. So,
are they natural enemies?
Well, red tails, are most birds of prey, are quite territorial about their breeding territories, and certainly Central Park is Pale Male's turf, his home turf, and he would notice. I don't think he would ever actually charge anything like an eagle, but he would certainly notice it and keep an eye on it.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Yerke, let's talk about New Orleans for a bit. I've heard that the numbers of resident birds in New Orleans decreased after the flooding to the same extent that the human residents, like yourself, were displaced. Is that true?
Yes, Ira. My data from before the storm when compared to after the storm from some residential areas in New Orleans showed that about two-thirds of the bird population disappeared. Your typical suburban and urban backyard birds like mourning doves and mockingbirds and house sparrows and so forth.
Hmm. Interesting. And how many have returned? Hopefully more than the residents have returned.
Well, it depends on which species you look at. Some species like you mentioned mourning dove as being doing well in New Orleans. And actually, that mourning dove is sort of the best case of a bird that does seem to be coming back and is approaching its former numbers now. There are many other species, however, which are still very, very scarce. Cardinal appears to me to be on the verge of disappearing from formerly residential areas of the city that got flooded. Mm-hmm. House finches are virtually gone. House sparrows might be at about 30% or so of their former numbers. So not all species are coming back, but a few are.
Hmm. Let's go to the phones and see if we can get a winner on our non-contest. Hi, Debbie in Aldridge, New York.
Aldridge, yes. Hi.
Hi.
Do you want me to guess for the
Welsh? Why not?
Okay. I think the first one was an ivory-billed woodpecker.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
I have to get both of them. That was right. Yes, that's right.
I actually have, and the second one was the pigeon, but I actually have a book from Cornell Lab of Ornithology.
Debbie?
Yes?
It's not technically a pigeon.
A rock dove?
No.
Ooh, what was it?
Well, we have to go. No, I can't tell you. We have to go to the. You got one out of two so far. We'll find out later if it was close enough. Okay.
Okay, I'll wait.
Thanks for playing our nine game. Let's go to Carl in Lancaster, New York. All the New Yorkers are calling in. Carl.
Yes. Hi, Ira.
Yes.
Yeah, that was the Ivyville Woodpecker and the Mourning Dove. That was easy.
The Mourning Dove. Yeah, that was an easy one. Do you have a feeder outside your home?
I have a few, yes. I have a lot of mourning doves.
Do you notice anything different this year about the birds at the feeder because of the weather or the climate that we're having this year?
I have a lot more house sparrows and a lot less. I have no tree sparrows or song sparrows. They're feeding in the fields.
Wow, because the food is available. All right, Carl, thanks for calling.
Thanks.
Jeff, interesting.
Very. That's the kind of thing that it's the way that, given that the Christmas bird count occurs in the same place as you mentioned and the same people doing it in the same way every year at the same time of year, that's the kind of thing that, you can sort of track over time as to what these, what's involved with the changes of exactly where the birds are and which portions of the local areas as well as of the continent that you find them based on just what's happening in a given season.
And in the wintertime, the bird feeder helps because the snow covers the ground, but we have no snow out here in the east, so the birds are foraging on their own.
Exactly. They just don't really need to come into those feeders. And it is, I just want to mention to remember that people should also, in addition to feeding the birds, it's also important to have a heated bird bath or at least keep one that doesn't get frozen during the winter because almost more importantly than the bird seed itself, they do need water and a place to bathe.
Well, that's interesting, yeah, and the water will freeze unless you heat it. All right, we're going to take a short break and come back and take lots more of your calls about the birds. What kinds of birds have you been spotting? Maybe some unusual occurrences, some rare birds. We'll come back and talk lots more with Jeff LeBaron about the Christmas bird count that's going on. And also Dr. Yockey will tell us some more about what's happening in New Orleans. So stay with us. We'll be right back after this short break. Listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. It's our annual Christmas bird count program with my guest Peter Yockey, biographer and chair of the Department of Geography at the University of New Orleans, and Jeff LeBaron, director of the Christmas bird count at the National Audubon Society in Williamsburg, Massachusetts. Our number 1-800-989-8255. Dr. Yockey, when you got back to New Orleans, was it like Silent Spring there?
Yes, It really was almost surreal at some places in the city which had been flooded and the people were gone and the birds were also almost entirely gone. The silence, both because of the lack of human noise and the lack of bird noise, was really kind of very, very odd and very kind of spooky even in some ways.
Mm-hmm. And have they been gradually coming back or did they come back in little groups? I mean, one at a time or you see them in groups?
Well, it's actually pretty complicated, and different species have been doing it in different ways. It seems like for some species, like the house sparrow, what might be going on is that most of the increase in the numbers, and there hasn't been a huge increase in numbers yet, they maybe have gone from an 85% reduction to now maybe a 70% reduction in the numbers from formerly. It seems like maybe it's recruitment of young that were born here in the city, fledged here in the city mm-hmm. last summer. Others seem to maybe be being recruited from outside the metropolitan area. So it really isn't clear how they're moving into the city, whether it's singly or in groups, or how much of the recolonization is occurring due to reproduction and how much of it is due to immigration. But I think it's probably different for different species.
Mm-hmm. Jeff LeBaron, are the birds, I mentioned at the top that there was the impression that the birds are generally in trouble in this country. Is that, could that be a correct impression?
It's. I wouldn't say it's quite fair to say that all birds are in trouble. It's certainly, there are some birds that are definitely declining and are in serious trouble, but there are actually other species that are doing quite well. As what Audubon is actually undertaking now is a large-scale study of the Christmas bird count database. We're coming out with a document called the State of the Birds Report, which will be the first large-scale analysis of Christmas bird count data, looking at the trends that show up within CBC, within the Christmas bird count, as well as and comparing them to the trend data that we see from the Breeding Bird Survey in the summer. Mm-hmm. And that'll give us an even better idea of you know, which species are going up and which species are going down, sort of as a quick early results. We do know that things like rusty blackbirds, which winter primarily in the southeastern U.S., are really in dramatic decline. A species called Harris's sparrow, which breeds up mostly around James Bay and up in central Arctic Canada, and winters in the south central U.S., they're also declining quite a bit. But Merlins, which is a medium-sized falcon, real feisty, a lot of fun bird to watch. They're actually doing very well across the country. So it's quite, some birds are increasing, some are decreasing. Some, it also, are depending upon what region you look at, some are increasing in some areas and decreasing in others. So it's sort of a patchwork quilt of what's happening with them.
Are they decreasing because their habitat or their food supply is drying up?
There's certainly a lot of it has to do with habitat alteration, let's say. Grassland species and shrubland species as two groups in particular are declining sort of pretty much across the board because there's almost all the native grasslands are very much less than they used to have, in the extent that they used to be. And shrubland species, shrubland is a transitional habitat between, when something burns or is farmed or whatever, and then as thickets and stuff comes back and it starts to generate back into forest land, there's a whole host of species, including things like painted buntings and probably some of the other species like kestrels and loggerhead shrikes that are declining, that need that sort of transitional habitat. And as agricultural practices are changing, there's less and less shrubland, and parcels aren't left to go fallow, and also as development tends to gobble up areas that would be left to shrubland. So it's those are declining habitats.
Interesting. Let's go to Chris in East Hampton. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Ira. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wanted to mention I had read in American Birds that the hurricanes not only affected New Orleans, but apparently a lot of birds that were on their way south got picked up by the hurricanes, deposited back north, and on their way back south were counted on the count. So I think Jeff was actually the one that wrote that article.
Yep, I did.
And I think that's fascinating. I mean, we had a lot of, great birds on the count last year. This year it was kind of quiet, but I'm doing another one tomorrow, so let's hope, for the best.
What do you see out there in East Hampton?
Well, I tell you what, we had a snowy owl last week, which was nice. It's kind of rare. American pipit, Ipswich sparrow, which is a subspecies of the Savannah sparrow. Those were some of the highlights. We have water birds, we have grassland birds, and we have woodland birds out here. So we get, as a matter of fact, Montauk sometimes ranks very high in the count. For the state.
Yeah. Do you go out in a group of people? Do you go out by yourself? And how much homework do you have to do? Do you have to bring the big bird book with you?
Well, I go out with groups. It's better to have more than one observer, especially a few years ago I spotted an American oyster catcher on the count, and I just happened to you know, call my friend Steve over and say, hey, Steve, American Oyster Catcher. We didn't really think much of it until we got to the compilation dinner, and it was a big deal. So I'm glad I had confirmation on that.
And which book is your Bible?
Well, you know, I'll be honest with you, Ira. I grew up with Peterson's Eastern, and you know, except if I go out west or, you know, wherever I go, I'll grab a Peterson's. I like his art. His birds are just the best. That's all I can say.
Hmm. Jeff, you agree, or are you going to be more diplomatic?
I like them all. But I think... certainly, the beauty of the Peterson guides is that he really developed a system of bird identification that was unique and mm-hmm. sort of set the standard for all field guides that followed after that. Mm-hmm. And you just can't go wrong with that kind of thing. And David Sibley's artwork is, you know, just fabulous. And he illustrates a lot more of the different plumages for a given species than had ever been available in any of the other field guides before. But the newer versions of David's books that have come out, the Eastern and Western ones, have addressed the issue that a lot of people had of the big Sibley guide is really, it's a little bit too big to carry around unless you've got a really big backpack.
Yeah.
So it tends to be the book that stays in the car as reference.
Yeah. A great gift in a car, but it's tough to lug around for 6 hours. Dr. Yawkey, you've looked at a bird many of us associate with the South, the mockingbird. Tell us how that's doing.
Oh, yeah, the mockingbird, very interesting here in New Orleans. Of course, the mockingbird is a citywide resident throughout residential areas as well as occurring outside the city, and is in basically everybody's backyard here, or at least it was before the storm. And they took a big hit during the storm, more or less, you know, commensurate with the overall loss of the bird population here. And then there was some repopulation by springtime, a lot of territorial males around. And I had been sending my bird classes out on the University of New Orleans campus for about a decade before the storm. And part of their semester projects when I taught the class was to find mockingbird nests and to report on the fate of the nest, you know, whether they succeeded in fledging young or not. So I had this set of data showing the pre-storm conditions, which I could think compared to what happened the summer after the storm. And all the data that I had showed that the mockingbird reproduction in the city just skyrocketed during the summer after the storm, whereas on the UNO campus, you know, it was the norm for mockingbird nests to fail, to get predated before the young fledged the nest, you know, maybe 10 or 20% would survive. After the storm, it was more like 80 or 90% surviving. So it seemed like somehow the storm had taken out some nest predator. I don't know what the major nest predator was or predators were before the storm. You know, I know that blue jay and crow numbers, and also squirrel numbers, by the way, the squirrel population took a hit similar to both the human and the bird populations. Squirrels are nest predators. And so something had taken away nest predators and were allowing mockingbirds to have what appeared to be great nesting success. And I was expecting a big rebound in numbers in the fall from all that summer reproduction. But for some reason, it didn't really happen. It seems like the young that were produced this summer either left the city or died for some reason without us being able to detect it or something like that. But at this point, the numbers are still down for northern mockingbird. Even after the strange summer of very high reproductive success, apparently a release from predation pressure. The other weird thing about it was that it seemed like the high reproductive success was contingent upon the male mockingbird actually being able to attract a female, and that it seemed like maybe as high as a quarter or even more of the male mockingbirds were unable to find a female. And so there was kind of this weird playoff between difficulty in pairing, but very high success if they could find a female. But in the end, it didn't really seem to have much of an impact on the mockingbird population of the city.
Wow.
So it's a very complicated puzzle going on there right now.
Yeah, I would imagine. 1-800-989-8255. Judith in Chico, California. Welcome to Science Friday.
Yes, I just wanted to say that talking to my friend in Anderson last week, it's just south of Reading. He is having large numbers of robins in his yard. Now, the northern Sacramento Valley has been having record freezing temperatures.
Oh, is that right? And do you think that's affecting the bird population?
Well, this is no time at all that we ever see robins in this part of the valley. They come through in the spring, not really aware of them in a fall migration, but they usually don't show up here to sometime in March.
Jeff, could they be coming out for the cold weather?
Well, it could be that the cold, if they had been further north or further up in the hills or something, the cold weather might have actually forced them down more into the valley and closer into areas, near to your friend's house. Robins, during the winter, actually do form big flocks and oftentimes form tremendous roosts. There are sometimes counts in the Midwest that can get up to, you know, over a million robins in a given roost. So if one of those happens to be near your friend's house, that could be part of it as well. And it's one of those things where, you know, most years you might think there just aren't any around, and if you happen to be near the roost, they're kind of everywhere. But robins in general are one of the species that do seem to be shifting their range northward in the winter. And that's another one of the things that we're trying to look at with the Christmas bird count is, try to see what birds are shifting their ranges northward. Some are shifting their ranges southward in the winter, and it's interesting to try to figure out the big picture.
Thank you, Judith. Could that be due to climate change?
It certainly could be. That's one of the things that Audubon's going to, and a lot of other people are very interested in looking into that.
Yeah.
We can pretty easily document what species are shifting their ranges. The question then becomes, why are they shifting their ranges? And to actually document that it's actually climate change is the challenge.
Mm. Talking about the birds this hour on Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. Dr. Yockey, as a biographer, for you as a biographer, why is the Christmas bird count important to you?
Well, the Christmas bird count represents the single largest data set.
I said biographer. I meant biogeographer. I'm sorry. I called you a biographer. You're a geographer. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Thank you.
no wonder you were so confused, because I was confused.
the Audubon Christmas bird count is the largest single data set anywhere in the world, that can be used to analyze geographical distributions and also changes in numbers through time. As you've described well earlier in the show, there's just a huge effort amassed every winter time by amateur birders. In North America, your average amateur birder is very, very skilled, and birders are really good at ferreting out birds and counting them. And so it's really a very good data set to have handy, and it covers everywhere from Barrow, Alaska, to even some counts in the tropics now outside of North America, and even some counts done at sea. I have looked into it. I've participated in it, of course, over the years just for fun, and I've also analyzed some things with it scientifically. I have used it to try and get a handle on impacts of both Katrina and Rita on birds in the winter following the storms, landfall last summer, or two summers ago, rather. And those analyses are not complete yet, but they do. The Christmas bird count was able to pick up a very strong signal from those storms coming ashore. It is very clear from the count data that a lot of species, especially resident land birds, were in unusually low numbers last winter immediately after the storms.
Mm-hmm. Jeff LeBaron, do you ever count city birds, like pigeons?
Of course, we do. Theoretically, every bird that every observer sees during the course of a day is counted, and it doesn't matter whether it's, city bird or out in the forest, or if it's we tally introduced species as well as native and resident species, because actually it's important to keep track of what's happening with some of the like these escaped parrots that are so prevalent down in South Florida and Southern California.
I have them in Brooklyn also.
Yep, among parakeets. Yep.
And Chicago, every place.
Yep. And they're so the the real beauty of the Christmas bird count is just like, as Peter just said, it's, you know, mobilizing this, you know, you get all these people out there that really do know what they're looking at. For the,
and how do you join it if you want to join the bird count?
It's the key right now on the easiest way to do it or best way to do it is on the Christmas bird count website, which is www.audubon.org/bird/CBC. There's a link there that says get involved, and that allows you to search state or by province or even by country down in Latin America, and look at the dates that have been posted for this year's Christmas bird counts. And then there's a contact information right there. If you don't have access to the web, can always, you know, contact your local bird club or Audubon chapter, and you need to get in touch with the local organizer or compiler of the count. And then they'll get you out in the field with someone, or if you happen to live within a count circle, you can actually just count the birds at your feeders.
Terrific. I want to thank both of you and wish you both great luck in counting birds this season. Good luck to you, and have a happy new year.
Thank you. You too, Ira.
Thanks for taking time.
Thank you, Ira. You too.
You're welcome. Jeff LeBaron is director of the Christmas Bird Count at the National Audubon Society, and Peter Yawkey is a biogeographer and chair of the Department of Geography at the University of New Orleans. We're going to take a short break and come back, still talking about birds, the bird people love to hate, and why you shouldn't. Think about it. We'll be right back after this break. Stay with us.